The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
With the bookies' favourite Ben Wallace already ruling himself out of the running, who are the contenders to be the next Prime Minister following Boris Johnson's resignation? Well, to get some insight, I'm joined now by Sky News political correspondent Tamara Cohen, and we'll also find out which of these candidates Labour would like to face in any forthcoming general election, because Labour MP for Leeds Central Hilary Benn is also joining us, both on the line. Good morning and welcome. Tamara, let's start with you. 11 runners and riders thus far. I'm not sure if that's the limit or whether we'll get to the dozen or even the baker's dozen. How many of these should I take seriously?
Yes, it's quite extraordinary how many people are in the race, Pat. Excuse the background noise. I've just stepped out of Parliament where all the plotting and deal making is going on. And yes, of course, I think we're going to see a lot of them whittled down by the end of this week. In fact, senior Conservatives are pretty clear that they want to see the numbers slim down at breakneck pace, really. And I think we're going to see the first vote happening on Wednesday morning, with the timetable and the threshold for the contest going to be set tonight. So by tonight, we'll know how many MPs each candidate who wants to succeed Boris Johnson will need to have nominating them, and the feeling is it's probably going to be set at least 20. So of those who have nominated themselves so far, I'm sure a couple at least will fail to meet the 20 threshold, and then obviously after that it will get tougher, with the first ballot of MPs possibly having a threshold as high as 36 to get to the next round. That's about 10% of the party. So I think Tory MPs are pretty clear they don't want this running on and on. And as one of them unkindly put it to me, some of them, those who've thrown their hat in the ring, are not even household names in their own households. So I think we'll see this slimming down pretty quickly.
Okay, so your best betting then on how many might remain standing, say, by the end of this week, and how soon it can then go to the Tory party membership?
So we expect those who are in charge of this whole contest, is called the 1922 Committee. They're basically Conservative backbench MPs, and they elect officers to represent them. So we expect that they will want all the rounds of voting by MPs to be concluded by next Thursday, which is the day that MPs go off for their summer recess. So that's how quick we're going to get to the final two. And then those final two are voted on by Conservative Party members over the summer, with the intention that we have a new Prime Minister in place by September. So although the parliamentary rounds, the voting by MPs, is being conducted really at breakneck pace, there's then going to be a slower period where the final two go on hustings around the country, a series of debates in different areas. And so I think that bit will be a lot slower. But what's quite interesting about this contest, Pat, is there really is no obvious front runner. You've got quite a lot of big hitters. You've got the Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, who declared late last night. You've got the former Chancellor Rishi Sunak, who obviously resigned from Boris Johnson's cabinet, along with Sajid Javid, who's also running. So they could have kicked off the whole crisis and demise of Boris Johnson. You've got the new Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi. I mean, there's a lot of big hitters in this contest. And then you've also obviously got some of the newer, more junior MPs, who you might think were just doing this as a bit of a profile raiser to get a job in the eventual cabinet, but actually some of them have had some really big endorsements. So you know, for example, Tom Tugendhat, who's an MP who chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee and who's been a big critic of Boris Johnson, he's running, and he has secured the endorsement of a chair of the Northern Tory MPs, which represents about 50 Northern Conservatives. That's a really big endorsement. So it could end up being the case that if some of these more junior candidates drop out, it could be who they then endorse which has a really decisive impact. So there's so many dynamics at work here. I really think it's actually so much more dynamic than previous Tory leadership contests in that respect.
Now, to compare it to what's going on in the United States and Donald Trump and all candidates seeking election in the Republican Party, you know, need to be clones of Trump in some minor way. Are we likely to end up with, a Boris Johnson clone in a minor key versus someone who's perhaps the very antithesis of Boris Johnson as the final two?
That's a really interesting question. I think there will be a version of that. So I think a lot of the other campaigns have said that they think that the eventual two will be their campaign versus Rishi Sunak. So if there is an early front runner, you could say it's Rishi Sunak, who's been the Chancellor. He has already the support of, to tell you the number off my spreadsheet in the last 5 minutes, 35 Conservative MPs, so pretty much a shoo-in for the first couple of rounds. So if Rishi Sunak is a candidate who is standing for, you know, he resigned from Boris Johnson's cabinet, so obviously, you know, triggered to some extent this crisis. He's also taking quite a firm stance on not cutting taxes too much. So I think the other candidate will obviously, if he ends up in the final two, will be the sort of stop Rishi candidate. And I think you have certainly got candidates in this race, particularly Liz Truss, whose selling point is that they didn't resign from the cabinet, they didn't abandon Boris Johnson at the end, and that, you know, how they responded and how what role they played in the final days and hours of Boris Johnson's leadership will possibly become an issue in this contest, because as one MP put to me, don't forget, half the members wish we hadn't got rid of Boris Johnson. So, and this, it's the Tory party members. We don't know how many of them there are, something around 150,000, but they have the final vote. And so they may not look that favourably on someone who brought down Boris Johnson. It's really incredibly hard to say at this stage. Mm.
Now, the question of Boris Johnson's ghost lingering, I mean, his corporal presence will linger in number 10 until there's a successor, and stories of him wanting to have a wedding bash in Chequers, and that's part of the reason why he wanted to leave. But his difficulties may mount. Being Prime Minister insulates you from all sorts of charges. Sunday Times going yesterday with the story about how he tried to get a job for a woman that he was involved with. More stories like this are likely to surface, and people supporting Boris Johnson so publicly may live to regret that in terms of this contest.
It was actually so interesting, Pat, to see that story in the Sunday Times, those allegations, which were not at all denied by Downing Street, this statement that they put out was that this occurred before Boris Johnson was an MP. It happened 10 years ago, and then the conversation that was recorded happened 4 years ago. So their statement was that this happened before he was an MP, not that it didn't happen. And it didn't get that much coverage because we have seen so many of these allegations before, whether it's with his now wife, Carrie Johnson, and allegations of trying to get her a job, and Jennifer Arcuri and so on. We've had seen so much of this. It's almost, to use the awful word, priced in. And a lot of Conservative MPs just feel that they've heard it all before. So, yes, I think we could end up hearing more, possibly with less influence from those stories now, once he's actually left office. I think the bigger question will be whether Boris Johnson, if he remains Prime Minister while this contest is going on, as he's now expected to, there were some calls for him to go, but it's now expected he'll stay there for the next couple of months, whether he, having appointed quite a few new ministers last week to replace those who resigned, whether he will genuinely stick to his promise not to introduce many new policies and just be a caretaker, or whether it will be very difficult to do that and he will try and have a few last stands on the issues that he cares about. I think one other interesting dynamic in this contest is, you asked me about the Republican Party. We've certainly seen one candidate, at least, Suella Braverman, who was sort of an unexpected one, and she comes from very much the right of the Conservative Party. She's taken some very strong positions on leaving the European Convention on Human Rights, a very strong line on the Northern Ireland Protocol. And what we may see with her is, even if she doesn't make it till the end, that the right of the party try to use some of her positions to try and push other candidates further to the right on some of those issues. So it could be that the Conservative Party's chosen candidate moves further to the right on some of those issues than Boris Johnson had done.
Tamara, thank you very much for joining us. Tamara Cohen, Sky News political correspondent. Hilary Benn, Labour MP for Leeds Central, listening to all of that. Hilary, good morning.
Good morning.
What a strange situation that people who happily sat at Boris Johnson's cabinet table are now reformers of the ills of Boris.
I think that's a really good point, actually. You said earlier they may live to regret their support for him. And the fact is, they propped him up, they backed him, they looked the other way, while his manifest faults that, to be honest, everybody knew about when they elected him leader of the party and prime minister in the first place, his huge problem with integrity, inability to tell the truth, And I'm afraid that is going to weigh very heavily on all of their shoulders. Secondly, there's a huge contradiction at the heart of this campaign, because you've got lots of candidates saying we must cut taxes. But this is a government which has been high taxing and high spending, because I think everyone in Britain had had enough of the years of Osborne austerity. And picking up the last point that Tamara made, for a potential leader, I don't suppose she'll win, what do I know? I've no idea who's going to win this contest, to say that the UK should remove itself, withdraw from the European Convention on Human Rights, which we helped to create out of the ashes and the horror of the Second World War, which is a founding principle of the kind of country that we are, that we use to talk to other countries when they behave in a way that is incompatible with the convention. Well, that shows how far to the right the parts of the Conservative Party are moving. And I don't think that's where the British people are. I don't think that's where the people who will determine the outcome of the next election are. And people will not forget we've had 12 years of Conservative government, the long waiting lists, chaos in the passport office, chaos at the airports, all of these things, a huge energy price crisis. A lot of people just won't be able to meet their bills now, but especially in the autumn and the winter. I think it's time for a change, regardless of who is elected. And I hope we have an election soon, which I hope very much that Labour under Keir Starmer's leadership, we can win.
The question, I suppose, is who would you like to be facing as leader of the Conservatives? Which of that lot would present the best opportunity for Labour?
To be absolutely honest with you, I don't have a view on that. I don't care. That is a matter for the Conservative Party to take a decision about. And I don't suppose endorsement from anybody, positive or negative, would from the other side of the house would do them any favours. Because those fundamental questions, they're backing for a disgraced Prime Minister, the impact of 12 years of Conservative government, coming to the wrong conclusions about what is now needed to meet the challenges of the future. We will take that argument to whoever the Conservatives choose. And then the people will decide when the election comes. Now, my view is whoever wins is very unlikely to seek to call an election, because with a majority of over 80, remember what happened to the last newly elected Prime Minister and Conservative Party leader who thought she would try and improve her majority. Well, she promptly lost it. So I don't think that we will see that. And therefore, the election is a little bit way off, in my view.
In terms of Ireland, I suppose, given what Liz Truss has been saying about the protocol and so on, we don't want her. I'm not sure whether she has the kind of charisma that, if one thing Boris Johnson had, it was a certain element of charisma until the balloon burst. But someone like Liz Truss certainly has a charisma deficit, but policies which might be dangerous to Ireland.
Well, I think you put your finger on it in the second part of what you said, policies that are bad for Ireland, bad for our relationship with the European Union, and bad for Britain's reputation in the world. I mean, there is a bill, we're going to have the first day of committee stage this week, which seeks to rip up an international treaty that Boris Johnson negotiated, Boris Johnson signed, Boris Johnson praised at the time. He even described it as being in perfect conformity with the Good Friday Agreement. And what does that say about where Britain as a country has got to, when the government, with a reasonably straight face, says, well, we think this is important? Now, don't get me wrong, the fact that the institutions in Northern Ireland, the Assembly and the Executive are not functioning, is a very serious matter, and it is a crisis and we need to solve it. The argument, Pat, is what's the best way to solve it? And in my view, the answer is stop seeking to have a punch up with the EU, because you talk to EU colleagues, they're quite convinced that the government isn't really interested in sorting it out. And is our future relationship with, you know, our good friends in Ireland, the rest of the European Union, going to be laid low by a continuing debate about sandwiches, cuts of meat, seed potatoes, and parcels? As Peter Kyle, my good colleague, who's the Shadow Northern Ireland Secretary, said, you know, politicians managed to negotiate the Good Friday Agreement, an astonishing, historic achievement, complex, difficult, painstaking, but we seem incapable of negotiating for a prawn sandwich to cross the Irish Sea without a lot of paperwork in tow. And I think with the right approach on both sides, and I've criticised the Commission, I've said the Commission needs to move further, and I hold to that view, but this is a political problem that needs a political solution. And the only way you're going to do that is to sit down in patient political negotiation and reach a resolution, because once that is dealt with and the institutions are up running, then we as a country can turn our minds to what is the new question. The referendum has happened, we're out, but what is our new but different relationship with the EU going to look like? And Keir Starmer set that out, the building blocks of a new partnership, which I think we can build over time to our benefit, to reduce obstacles to trade, get a veterinary agreement, allow artists to go and perform, easier for business travellers, lots of things that we can address, which are in the interests of the EU and the United Kingdom. But you need grown-up politics to do this.
Well, let's hope we get a grown-up politician at the helm. Hilary Benn, Labour MP for Leeds Central, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.